Thank you for joining with us for another episode of Morning Briefings here on the Pipeline Intercession for the President and on our podcast. If you have any dreams that you have about the Office of the President, please send them to pip@christiancenterstreetport.com. We're so thankful that you all have joined in with us on this prayer journey, and we look forward to standing with you not only today, but in the days ahead. So with that, we'll go ahead and join today's broadcast as we talk about the news and stand on the wall for this nation and the Office of the President. Good morning, everyone. Zach R. Skyden coming to you live from North Carolina. And what a blessed day it is to be back with you, each and every one of you. And for those who listen via podcast, thank you for helping us get the word out of praying for the Office of the President as we check our emotions at the door so that we can save souls, which is our ultimate goal here, as we pray for the Office of the President. Okay. Today, I want to give this warning, it will be a very meaty day. There's a lot that's been happening, but there's also just a meaty perspective that we need to keep our emotions in check on. And it first starts with our verse of the day in 2 Chronicles 20, verse 20. And I want to start here, and I want to go back a little bit in chapter 20. And it says here in verse 20, it says, "They rose early in the morning and went out to the wilderness of Tekoa. And when they went out, Jehoshaphat stood and said, 'Listen to me, O Judah and inhabitants of Jerusalem. Put your trust in the Lord, your God, and you will be established. Put your trust in his prophets and succeed.'" And I titled today's episode of "The Battle Belongs to the Lord," because we have to put our trust and our hope in the Lord. And when we go back in the beginning parts of verse of chapter 20, we see that Judah has been invaded, the sons of Moab, the sons of Ammon, with the sons of the Midianites all came to make war against Jehoshaphat and Judah. And then Jehoshaphat goes and prays and seeks the Lord on what he is to do. And what he is told is by the priest at the time, Jehazel. It is after Jehoshaphat prays and seeks the Lord for what he's to do, then the prophets come out and tell him what he's supposed to do. And it says in verse 14, "Then in the midst of the assembly of the Spirit of the Lord came upon Jehaziel, the son of Zechariah, the son of Benaniah, the son of Jael, the son of Mattaniah, the Levite of the sons of Asaph. He said, 'Listen, all Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem and King Jehoshaphat. Thus says the Lord to you, do not fear or be dismayed because of this great multitude, for the battle is not yours, but God's. The battle belongs to the Lord. Tomorrow," this is their what they're told to do, "tomorrow go down against them," those who have come to attack them, "and behold, they will come up by the ascent of Ziz, and you will find them at the end of the valley in front of the wilderness in Jeriel. You need not fight in this battle. Station yourselves, stand, and see the salvation of the Lord on your behalf, O Judah and Jerusalem. Do not fear or be dismayed. Go out to face them, for the Lord is with you." And then they ended up worshiping, they sing praises, and then we get to verse 20 where it says, "Early in the morning." Again, this timeline of reordering our day, getting in the presence of the Lord, praising him as they did here. And what happened is they went, when they went down, as they were praying, chaos started to come into the midst of the camp of the enemy. And they ended up fighting against themselves and literally destroying themselves. And all Israel did was just go down. Judah went down and captured up the spoils. So we want to today sing a song to the Lord of praise that the battle belongs to him. in our prayer time and ask the Lord to send confusion in the enemy's camp and declare that you will take the spoils of the enemy, because the battle belongs to the Lord. Okay. Now, I want to shift to a prophetic word that Chuck Pierce gave, or a dream Daniel Pierce gave, and then Chuck gives the interpretation. And I think this will help us understand a lot of what's in the news today and a lot what's happening with Russia and Ukraine. When we look at what the Lord is saying. Now, this dream was given publicly on February 24th, so a few weeks ago, from Daniel, and it was about an altercation in the spirit with Russia and the United States, how the United States was unarmed, and then Russia, we get in a fight. But here's the interpretation. If you haven't seen, I'll put the link up later, but I want to focus on what Chuck says about the dream, because that's a little bit kind of a foundation of helping us understand what's happening right now. And so here's what Chuck says.
We have to understand that things are changing greatly worldwide. You know, nobody is less doom and gloom prophet than I'm not that. But if we don't understand that God said in November, watch, because war will be manifesting.
Let's pause there. So the stuff about war, Chuck is prophesying that it'll be, he heard about it in November. So this is it happening. I know a lot of people, oh my God, it's happening. What's going on? Let's not get confused. It's God was aware that this would happen in the spring.
By April, we will be confused if we're not aware about it.
And that's what's key. We'll be confused if we're not aware about it. And if you're seeing a lot of the prophetic and a lot of things coming out from the news media and everybody involved, there's a lot of confusion on. And so when we look back to say, okay, what did the Lord say to the prophets? What is the Lord saying? Chuck saying, be patient, wait and see. Get in right alignment with the Lord.
I have written books since the 80s about...
And then there's also this, is Chuck, not to laugh, but to say that, yeah, Chuck has been hearing about Russia and China and about wars and things breaking out around this time since the 80s, the future war of the church, God's Unfolding Battle Plan. He ends up mentioning a few of the other books if you want to get
situations
them.
Like this. And now they're starting to manifest. Some of you on the web, I know you're new with us. You probably want to read the Future War of the Church series. We'll put it up for you. We'll do a special this week on Future War of the Church, God's Unfolding Battle Plan, and a time for...
And so if you're confused, conflicted about what's happening, he does in those. They're very wordy, but they're very good books, something to get more information out of, because he's been prophesying this since the 80s, well before I was alive, and a lot of it's coming true. And so we're starting to see that stuff manifest here. But what he says after he tells about these books, it is very key for us to have a mindset now and in the days ahead.
To triumph, and then Passover prophecies, which takes us all the way through 2026.
This right here is what
dream is a clear warning that we are in a place where Russia is establishing themselves at a higher place. It's going to create a misfire in something we're going to do. And when that happens, they're going to take charge in ways that we must be aware of. Now,
okay, so that's very key there, is this is not unbeknownst to the Lord. The Lord is very aware of what's happening, and we're starting to see that. Okay, so we see what the prophetic says, and now we look at what's happening in involved with Ukraine and Russia itself. So a brief update after we look at the prophetic here, let's look at, okay, what now, what's happening in Ukraine? What could cause this misfire? What is Russia doing that is allowing themselves to be put in a position of strength because of our misfire? And so what we're seeing now is talks between Ukraine and Russia have gone literally nowhere. There's recent talks. This is reported this morning at 7:47 a.m. Eastern Standard Time that the top Russian and Ukrainian officials have met in Turkey about the whole situation going on. And I want to quote some of the things that were said by Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmitry Kuleba. He said, no progress was made on the ceasefire during the discussion. He said, I made a simple proposal to Minister Lavrov. I can call my Ukrainian ministers, authorities, presidents now and give you 100% assurances on security guarantees for humanitarian corridors. He goes on to say, I asked him, can you do the same? He did not respond. And so they're disagreeing on what's going on. They agreed to seek a continuing solution for the humanitarian crisis on the ground. And the response from Lavrov tells you a lot about what's happening right now. Lavrov, meanwhile, told reporters that Russia was not planning to attack other countries. Bold-faced lie. Because he says, his words, not mine, his words, he said, we did not attack Ukraine either. He's saying Russia did not attack Ukraine. They needed to conduct special military operations in Ukraine for its own security. Because if you remember, they deemed the outlying regions on the eastern corridor of Ukraine as independent Russian territory, and then you need to go secure it. So what they're doing is not an attack. Very, very interesting, because we see the aftermath of an attack that has been confirmed now by the Wall Street Journal, of an attack on a maternity hospital. Now, the Kremlin itself says they're going to look into the attack and that they don't know the truth. We don't know the truth. Nobody knows the truth. We have to talk to our Russian military assets in the ground in Ukraine to supposedly figure out if this is true. Only the Russians can confirm or deny that this is the truth or not. But let's point back to what happened in Syria when Russian and Syrian forces, did the exact same thing in March, between March of 2011 and December of 2017. The Russians were accused of doing the exact same thing, and they have found, Physicians for Human Rights corroborated 492 attacks on healthcare facilities in Syria and 847 deaths of medical personnel between that timeline. So Russia has a history in other interests and fights that they have been involved in of doing the exact same thing that they're being video evidence from the mayor of this little town in Ukraine of doing. But they're saying, no, we can't verify that it happened. Let's wait for the truth to come out on that. But it's pretty alarming that could happen. Now, Zelensky has come out and said that the threat of a nuclear weapons being used on Ukraine, which again, this is not an attack on Ukraine if you're Russia, is ultimately just a bluff because why would Russia nuke parts of Ukraine when they want to capture it? They want to use it for other reasons. They're calling it a mere bluff. And then one of his assistants goes on to say that they're going to continue to try to seek diplomatic solutions, but they're not going to give up an inch. They're going to fight as long as they have to. And look, he's showing a backbone, whether you agree with him, whether you like him or not. He's showing a backbone that I think Putin misjudged 100%. He thought they would cave, the West would cave, to a point they kind of are. And so that's where we're at. Now, on Tuesday, news came out that Russia is claiming, and this could have been part of the misfire, this could be what is allowing Russia to gain an upper hand militarily, politically, naturally, that the United States was working with you in Ukraine to create biological weapons. It has been confirmed by U.S. officials that this might be the case, and that they're working with Ukrainians to prevent Russians from pulling it out. And they're hoping that the Russians would would do the proper thing. Now, this is an all chaos situation. Here, Jen Psaki comes out and says, now we need to watch out for Russia using chemical weapons. And what is not being talked about is the severity of these type of biological weapons that were being developed in Ukraine. And if you've followed me long enough here on the morning briefings, I talked about several months ago about how the NIH, the department that Dr. Fauci is over, has several hundred facilities like what happened in Wuhan that they fund, several hundred around the world, as well as pretty much all your G7 nations fund as well. So the fact that this is in Ukraine is not really a surprise, because they're everywhere. I mean, I forget. I need to go find that report again. But there are hundreds of facilities like these. So the fact that they found them in Ukraine is not really a surprise. It's an alarm, because I'll talk about this later, is the funding. Is they just push things through. They don't actually look at it, so they don't know what they're funding. So they're funding things, and yes, this could very well possibly be true. If it is, this is a misfire on our part, and this could cause Russia to gain an upper hand on us. It is sad that we would do things such as this. And ultimately, the reports are that China is asking for the United States to, just like we asked China to release the data and information on the Wuhan lab leak, they want the United States to leak all internal intel on what happened in Ukraine. And look, if this is happening in the United States, it needs to stop. We need to repent of funding this. We need to repent of allowing this to happen, and gain back control and pull this back. Because the question is, should you even do this? No, you shouldn't. Why are you developing biological weapons? This is what the Nazis did. Like, why are we even in the realm of consideration of doing this? Obviously, the Fauci and the likes will say, well, we want to do this so that we can create the vaccine. That's very alarming. If you didn't develop this, we wouldn't have to have a vaccine, but I digress. So if this is happening, repent, let the truth come out. No problem saying that stuff. But also take heed of, let's wait, because here's the issue, is Russia is saying these things and they're not producing any evidence. You know, there's the claim from the kids nowadays, they need to show receipts. Yeah, they need to show the evidence. They need to show what they're really finding. And the world does need to know about it, just like the world needs to know what's going on in Wuhan and what happened in Wuhan and what's going on in these other labs around the world. What are all they trying to do that is being held quiet? So just because there's bad news coming out against the U.S. doesn't mean we can't stand up and say the truth needs to come out. It does. And it needs to be dealt with, and justice needs to come forward. Okay. So that gets us into the response by this White House and this administration. So we've heard the claim that there are 9,000 leases available right now. I want to first highlight that as we enter into, and we've warned about this, that this is going to happen prophetically, naturally. There, all the key indicators are showing that inflation is heating up. And now stats come out and say 64% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. And as gas continues to climb, it's going to be harder and harder for people. For those who aren't living paycheck to paycheck, it's a time to show the love of Christ and listen to what the Lord would have you to do. I'm not saying people should do something or not do something. I'm saying listen to the Lord, see what he has to say for you in this season. Because those who are on retirement, living paycheck to paycheck, it's hard for them. And what is the biggest shocker of all is the response by this administration. We have to play this. I have to play this because we have to recognize that the Biden administration is best way to put it, is blinded and has a hardness of heart of what the realities and the consequences are having on the American people and the solution that could actually help. So I want to play this clip from a spokesperson from this White House. Just listen to this and we'll dissect it. And there's another clip I want to play that debunks this very notion here.
On domestic energy production, everyone's pointing fingers. We're talking about the number of permits. The industry's pushing back, talking about it's about labor shortages and rig quality and the time it takes to make a rig productive. What is the most constructive conversation we can have at this point in terms of increasing domestic supply that would address the problem in the short term?
Okay. The question is, increasing domestic supply that would reduce the problem in the short term. Listen to this answer.
Well, I appreciate the point. We should have a pragmatic conversation, particularly at this moment. And I think when we have talked to engage with the industry in the short term, there are no practical constraints to increasing production.
He says there are no practical constraints to increasing production. Let's remember that.
We've got a market economy unlike the other major oil producers globally.
Basically, we're diversified, so we're fine.
Globally, who are petrostates and who the state controls the means of production. There has been a lot of talk in the industry about capital discipline and concern about coming back into the market, given what happened in.
I'll talk about here in a second why there's a concern about coming back into the market.
2020 around the pandemic. But what we're trying to underscore is that in the short term, production comes back based on facilities and rigs that were in process previously or are close to production.
Let's pause there. Because right now in the short term, because they haven't been selling leases on land and on the water, there isn't as many opportunities to be able to drill and find oil and actually pull it out of the ground right now because of decisions that happened on day one of the Biden administration.
Those cases, there is no constraint. There's no federal constraint.
And yes, the leases that were bought and paid for and fought through litigation 10 years ago are finally able to come to fruition. And nothing can stop them now.
To bringing that production back online. And that's why we're seeing that production come back. As you say, it takes some time in some cases.
That very statement right there proves they understand exactly what it takes to produce oil in the United States.
We're seeing that production come back quite significantly. So I think that's the pragmatic conversation we should have about the very short term. The medium and long term, I think.
And this is where the brainwashing comes in.
The path and the trajectory is clear. There is no amount of domestic production.
This is a bold-faced lie. A bold-faced lie. There's no amount of domestic production
that we can do when we're dealing with a volatile global commodity where the price is set globally. There's no.
The price can be lowered by the fact that we produce it, and that was shown under the Trump administration.
Amount of domestic production we can do to reduce or eliminate our vulnerability as a country to that volatility. The only way to do that is to reduce the energy intensity of the economy overall.
What he means by energy intensity is by getting out of fossil fuels and getting into electric vehicles.
Which means shifting to cleaner sources of energy.
Quote unquote, his idea of cleaner sources of energy. Okay, so we've heard this preposterous claim from the Biden administration. Now, we're going to listen to somebody who actually works in the gas and oil industry in Texas and hear what he has to say about what's really going on and what it takes to actually be able to combine all these oil and gas leases that are needed and to be able to fight through the red tape that has been put on, not just by this administration, but by governments themselves. So this is Todd Staples, who works in Texas.
But we've had the cancellation of these pipeline projects.
Let me slow it down. I listen in double time.
And it's very interesting. I heard the president and his spokesperson comment on leases about we're giving you all the leases you want. But the part of the story that they're not telling that is just so unfair is that a lease doesn't equate to a permit to drill.
Yeah.
So
and hang on, because this is what I wanted to ask you. Everyone acts like you just put a spigot in the earth and you treat it like a petroleum kegger. That is not how this works. Explain to us this process, if you would, please.
This is straight from the horse's mouth of somebody who works in the industry.
So there's quite a lengthy process to produce oil and natural gas. It's very complex. Texas is very fortunate. We produce 43% of our nation's crude oil. We produce 26% of our nation's natural gas. We have some fantastic LNG facilities that we're exporting across the globe. But how this works is, you have to get capital together. You have to get leases together. And then in today's world, we're using the best technology available. Innovation has made us the world's leader in America because you put multiple leases together. And then you're able to bring in a drilling rig that moves across those leases. And so it's, you don't just stick a straw in the ground and then go on to some other place. This is a highly coordinated, a very thought out process, and it's highly regulated for safety and environmental reasons.
And so when they say, oh, we have 9,000 leases, but is it on land that you're able to find and pull gas out of? And when you stop it, when you stop selling these leases, you inhibit the ability of these oil and gas companies to put the capital and resources and manpower together to be able to do what he's talking about here. And this takes time because they may be working on one rig or one property. And then it may, as they're fighting through litigation to get the ability to be able to pull it over here on this property, that's going to take time. It's not just, oh, yeah, here you go. Go do it. Oh, no, that's not how it works.
Yeah, we have the cleanest extraction.
And then now he talks about how the efficiency, and I've talked about this with I'm going to skip this part because I think want to play this because there's a portion in here I want to hear.
Environmental protections in the world, which we don't get credit for. I honestly, American Oil and Gas does not get credit for this.
And it's amazing to me, in Texas alone, our routine flaring rate now is down to 0.2%. If you look at the crude oil that's produced in the Permian Basin, that has some of the lowest carbon intensity in the world.
This is huge to hear because we're saying, oh, it's dirty energy. But yet we're going to rely upon Russia and China and Iran and all these other countries to be able to produce it where they don't have the scrutiny of the EPA and other environmental protection agencies and activist organizations fighting against us to keep emissions low.
Our leaders and our energy companies are actually leading the way globally to capture carbon, to produce a lower emissions product. Our refiners are looking every day how to continue to refine that product to have lower emissions. And so if you really care about the climate and you want to have our world protected, you would want oil and gas produced right here in the United States of America. And we just, it's about signaling. And I will say this, Dana, the president did ban Russian oil from being imported. That's a strong signal. But the second part of that process needs to be,
and everybody's been saying this,
unleash American energy capacity. Let's make America energy leadership front and center on the world stage. And that signal has not come yet. And when we hear this conversation about leasing, which I want to finish that real quickly, just because there's a NEPA process.
This is the second part of this. Okay, you have the lease, then what happens after that?
That you have to go through to get these permits to finally to be able to drill.
And there's litigation.
And then there's this red tape.
Litigation, I was going to say. Environmental groups.
And litigation on top of that. So you have to get the lease, then be able to get the right to be able to drill on that lease. And then you have to fight litigation from activist organizations who are fighting you from being able to drill on the lease that you have gained the access to be able to on public lands.
Oil and Gas Association is monitoring and engaged in like 2,200 different lawsuits today to stop production on these federal lands. It makes no sense. It's not an energy strategy. It's not a real rational thought and comment about how we can meet the needs
of
Americans and the world.
I'm going to speed this up because it's easier to listen to.
And from what I understand, too, we're talking with Todd Staples, president of Texas Oil and Gas Association. In addition to the various leases as well, you also have to deal with Bureau of Land Management. I'm not a huge fan of Bureau.
This right here is more red tape with the Bureau of Land Management. Listen to this story that she's about to say.
Land Management, because I don't like the way they manage land. Usually it seems to me it's people out in D.C. that have never ranched, that have never worked in energy, that have never farmed, that want to come out weigh in on what ranchers and farmers and oil and gas men do.
That's part of it. The people in D.C. don't understand what actually has to occur for things to happen. But she goes and asks somebody who understands what's happening with the Bureau of Land Management. And here's the response.
I was talking with a friend who has done work on Permian Basin and all this. And they were saying, you wouldn't realize the number of leases and the number of applications and paperwork and everything else that is piled up with BLM, the original BLM, and just sitting there collecting dust. And it goes past that, I guess it's a 30-day period or whatever that they have to review this. And that additional red tape is just throttling this.
So just because you've gotten a lease doesn't mean you have the proper leases, doesn't mean you have everything. It takes time to acquire it. And then it takes time to understand where you can pull the resources and everything. So there's a lot of things going on in this process.
Well, that's the slow death of bureaucracy that really is the enemy of entrepreneurship. When you have systems in place that there's really no recourse for, there's just it's a taker situation where you just have to respond to those agencies. We're very fortunate in Texas, Dana, that we're about 99% privately owned lands. And if you think about it, that's one of the real reasons that we're one of the biggest producers, is because it's private lands, right, it's population, point, it's resources, and it's policies that says, let's capitalize, let's treat oil and gas like an asset, not like a liability. Our friends.
Now, and that's just in Texas. And he points something out here where it's more public lands.
In New Mexico, are really federal lands and state lands are very extensive. In Wyoming, that's the same case. And they are having problems processing all of those to get the approval that you need. Because, look, this is a key issue.
What he's about to say is really important. And we need to understand this, because this isn't just about oil and gas. There's a growing population. There's a need for more energy, cleaner energy. And going about electric vehicles and coal itself, statistically and historically, has not shown to be as environmentally friendly as they would claim it to be.
Need investment to be able to turn these assets into products that people use.
Right.
Oil and gas comprises 96% of the products that we use every day. Our phone screens, our makeups, our medicines, yes, our tires, all, you know, it's the basic building blocks of all the components we use. And so when you drag this out and when you say we need less of it rather than more, and I mean, my math, you tell me, I may be wrong, but we have 7.5 billion people on the planet today. That number, that I'm told, is going to rise to about 10 billion people by the year 2050. We're going to need more energy, more power to supply modern life to people across the globe. That means, yes, we need oil and natural gas produced environmentally friendly and to meet the concerns about climate that is going on around the world today. We also need other forms of energy, including hydrogen that's being looked at today, right, to be developed. And so we need more, not less, is the main message.
And that's a conversation for another day. But the point is that oil and gas have a heavy reliance upon what we do in our society. And when you have the Biden administration saying these things, causing inflation to go even higher and higher, where 64% of Americans are now living paycheck to paycheck. And that gets into, and I'll cover this briefly because I know I've gone on long, but I wanted to play those clips to debunk the lies that is coming out of this administration of saying there's nothing we can do. Because when you literally look at a graph of gas prices since Biden came in office on January 20th, 2020, gas prices have shot up from around $2 to upwards of $4.30. And we have cut our production since then. So just sit there and say that in the short term and long term, there's nothing we can do. That's a lie. Which gets into the point of the fact that the House itself has passed a $1.5 trillion government spending plan. They ended up cutting COVID relief funding because Republicans fought back and said, look, there's already money out there that hasn't been spent from states. They need to spend that first. So Nancy Pelosi cut that. There's also the fact that this bill was released with the early wee hours of yesterday morning and Wednesday. It is estimated to be around 2,700 pages long. And you're telling me they had time from the wee hours in the morning to late early afternoon to read all of that? I highly doubt that. There's things in there that are very, very alarming, that were put in there. And Nancy Pelosi is telling people, you need to grow up. You just need to deal with it. While at the same time, what's hidden in there is the fact that, while we're not funding our border, we are funding, 8 foreign countries' borders. And those countries include Jordan, Lebanon, Egypt, Tunisia, Oman, Nepal, Libya, and get this, Pakistan. We're funding border security programs for Pakistan. If you understand anything about Pakistan, they literally have Chinese companies operating their port. And on top of that, they have Chinese military assets protecting that port because it is owned by the Chinese, because Pakistan signed away their rights to the port to China in efforts to create quote-unquote economic funding and economic opportunity for the country. So the alarm situation there, and what we want to pray about on this situation, is pray for the senators involved to have wisdom and revelation when voting on the funding for the government. And they're tying Ukraine funding into this bill. It should be a separate standalone bill. Representative Chip Roy, call that out. If you want to talk about this, let's talk about it, which I think it's bipartisan, but they're using this as a tie, at least in the House, to get this stuff passed. But now it goes to the Senate. They now look at it, make their changes, debate it, while the supposed Friday deadline, while Democrats are in Philadelphia for a little convention that they're having. So we want to pray, continue to pray for wisdom for this administration on the Russia-Ukraine issue, and then also for the senators, who now the ball is in their court for funding the government. And it sadly doesn't look good, because Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer have already made their own deal to do a very alarming spending, because, oh, well, we got our defense spending, so that's all we care about. Meanwhile, not looking at line item by line item, where we're funding things that Russia possibly found in Ukraine, of us funding biological warfare weapons development. So we a lot to pray for today. I know it's very meaty. Thank you for staying with us as we pray for the office of the president, because there needs to be some wisdom and revelation coming in. So I'll close with that. I know it's a lot, but I think we broke down the prophetic. Give us a hope and a prayer point for the days ahead as we look to the future. We don't want to get caught up in the present, which will lead us to the past. We want to look to the future in the hope of what the Lord is telling us in the days ahead. Nothing is surprising the Lord. And with the enemy men feeble, God can turn for good. But that we need to stand, be where God has called us to be, as we see in 2 Chronicles 20. And so I close with that. I thank each and every one of you. We'll be back tomorrow with our noon prayers. We take a break today. And we'll give an update on what's going on. It's prophetic, and give a hope for the coming days ahead and the weekend. So blessings, and I will see you guys tomorrow. Have a good one.